It's Cofield and Company, live on location.
I'm a damn fool!
There's like 30 sandwiches here! What the f*** am I looking at?
Woman up.
Ooh! Ooh!
It's time for Cofield and Company with Steve Cofield on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go on this Tuesday. Man, I say it every year, which means I've actually lasted for a little while here. I'm sure this is all going to end pretty soon, but Cofield and Company back at the Thomas and Mack. I can't even count the number of years we've been doing the live show here before the basketball games, but it's been a while. I'm getting old. I'm getting old with you folks. Hopefully you have a lot of new listeners who are looking forward to a big UNLV Running Rebel season as they open tonight against Purdue Fort Wayne out of the Summit. Pretty decent program. Coach has been there just under, what, a half dozen years, has not had a losing season, so could be a stiff test tonight. The number right around 10.5. 11. So we're going to go all the way until 6:30 before Learfield with the official pregame show, Running Rebel warm-up, as John and Curtis Terry in for Robert Smith. We'll be taking over in 3.5 hours. Let's get to it.
It's time for the three. Presented by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call him today at 577-2600.
Adam Candy alongside Big Mac McKinnell. We'll be here in just a little bit. We open with NFL. And by the way, we're going to talk to Tim Buckley, the UNLV assistant coach, one of the new coaches on the staff for TJ Otzelberger. We'll talk to him in about 30 minutes. But football at the forefront, a lot of quarterback news today, and we certainly will get to Candy's Giants. Woo, that was not a good second half. Frankly, it wasn't a good first half. They set themselves up for the crappy second half. So the news is official. Cam Newton on IR, done for the season. If you were bullish on the Panthers, we kind of warned you on this whole thing. Again, you can never predict injuries, but this is a guy who was beat to hell the last couple of years. I didn't believe was going to come back healthy with that shoulder, but it turned out it's not the shoulder. He's got other ailments, so he's shut down for the season. Should we be mad? Like, I've seen some people out there who are mad. We're going to play a little D'Angelo Williams here in a second, former Panther running back, but are you angry about this? Do you feel like the Panthers have screwed over Cam Newton over the years?
I'm not mad about it. I mean, we're also not on social media, so maybe I should be using all of my anger on there. But
save it. Don't say anything good on the air.
Yeah, I mean,
it's social media.
I mean, that's what the medium's for, right? But this is who Cam Newton is, right? Like, we're talking about a guy who has nearly 4,000 passing attempts in his career, nearly 1,000 rushing attempts in his career. And it's who he's been all along, that you were going to run him, you're going to take advantage of the durability that he's given you for almost 10 years. I mean, Cam Newton, before last season, when he played hurt with that shoulder, had never missed more than 2 games in a season. And so this will be the first time that we've seen Cam Newton truly down and out to the point where he just can't go. And for the Panthers, this is reality. There's no anger to be had about it. This is the fact that maybe a quarterback who takes the kind of beating that Cam Newton has taken for a decade has an expiration date.
Yeah, this is also reality because I think a lot of people are going to look at this and go, hey, first of all, because people have to label everything black quarterback, running black quarterback, but just in general, running quarterbacks come in different sizes and shapes and also approach. Like, Josh Allen is probably headed towards where Cam Newton is. I don't know if he's going to ever have that much success as compared to Cam, you know, getting to a Super Bowl, but he's the same type of guy, a 6'5", 250 dude who's going to take a lot of shots. Lamar Jackson, a running quarterback. Hey, Steve Young, a running quarterback, right? Those guys are different types of running quarterbacks. They're elusive. They're not looking to finish the playoff by lowering their helmet and crush someone. And, you know, as fast as Cam Newton is, he's such a big freaking target that he's just been mauled over the years. I do believe the Panthers let him down on a couple of fronts. I don't know that the offensive line was very good many of the years, and he never really had until, you know, it's funny how this happened, right? Elway got Terrell Davis at the end of his career. He never really had, and D'Angelo Williams was solid, and I guess they had Johnny Stewart for a while there, so they had some running backs, but now they've got one of the top three running backs in football. That would have helped Cam Newton a lot. Here's D'Angelo Williams, who's on First Take, and But he's, I'll tell you, when he goes on these shows, man, he is fired up. He's a really good guest. I don't want to see him, you know, on the verge of punching the co-host because, you know, arguments are part of it. But he was ready to launch off on Max Kellerman. But here's D'Angelo Williams, a former NFL running back, just completely annoyed about how the Panthers have treated Cam Newton over the years.
I'm mad at North Turner, and I'm mad at Ron Rivera, and this is why I'm mad at them. What you're asking Kyle Allen to do is not what you ask Cam Newton to do. You ask Cam Newton to win it with his legs. You ask Cam Newton to pass out water bottles. You ask Cam to read defense. You ask Cam to beat you in so many other ways. All Kyle Allen is doing is stepping back, throwing the ball, and handing the damn ball off to Christian McCaffrey. Mm-hmm. Ask Cam to do the same exact thing because it's a West Coast offense. His West Coast offense does not bode well for quarterbacks that are mobile. That's it's
point. Cam was doing good in it last year.
And what did they do?
Well, he got hurt.
What did they do?
They were winning.
Last year, yeah. He in the first five or six games, yeah. It worked out well for him.
Yeah.
You said he got hurt, but then the next stretch, it didn't do well for him.
Well, because he was hurt.
I'm
he
telling
was never
you,
the same, D'Angelo.
He'd have never been hurt if he would have stopped him from running. All
well,
I'm
okay,
saying is what you're asking Kyle Allen to do, when Cam come back, ask him to do the same thing and compare apples to apples, not oranges to apples, because you're asking Cam not to just manage a game and not lose one. Mm-hmm. You're asking him to go win one. And all Kyle Allen is doing is managing the game and not losing.
All right. So a couple things in there, and I should also add in one other area I think the Panthers let down Cam Newton was with good receivers on the outside. I don't think they've actually had really good targets to throw to either. Kyle Allen is doing more than just handing the ball off to Christian McCaffrey. I think the question here is, could Cam Newton be a good quarterback over the years if he didn't have the running element? Could he just be a pocket quarterback? I'm not sure he could have been.
I also don't think it's time for us to rewrite history on who Cam Newton has been and how he compares to Kyle Allen 10 years into Cam Newton's career. Because, yeah, every time it got to third and short, you knew that the number one option for Carolina was a short Cam Newton run. And everybody knew that, and you had to defend the Panthers that way. And that's part of what made the Panthers dangerous.
It's funny, if you think back to the Thursday night game against Tampa Bay, what was everyone all pissed off about?
Why
at
didn't
the end
Cam
of the
run?
Yep. So you come to expect him to be the bull up the middle at 250, and people were really annoyed at that moment that he didn't carry the ball, and there was probably a reason, because he was very dinged up to begin with, and a guy coming off shoulder woes, the last thing you want to have him do is go and, you know, crash into the line with his shoulders.
Look, he's not the most accurate passer. He never was the most accurate passer. We don't have to ask him to be that. Neither is Kyle Allen, for that matter. So saying that let Cam do what Kyle Allen has done, okay, fine. So if Cam Newton comes back, maybe he has to adapt and become the kind of quarterback that Kyle Allen is being asked to be. But it's only reasonable that if you have Cam Newton's skill set to be able to run, to be able to make deep throws, that you're going to ask the quarterback to do that. That's why you draft him number one overall. That's why you take advantage of who he is for as long as he is that guy.
I want to touch on Cam a little more when McKinnell's here, because I think there's a little Bears angle we can talk about with what the Bears are going to do at quarterback down the road. Other quarterback news today. Are you surprised that Doug Marrone, Jaguars, are going to go away from Minshew mania and put Nick Foles back at starting quarterback?
Not in the slightest.
They're 4-5. The timing is not awful because of all the games Minshew has played this year. The game in London was by far his worst. I don't know if that means he's regressing, but you got to think if you invest $22 million a year, if you had that much confidence in Nick Foles to be your starting quarterback. Unless the Jags were like 6-2 right now, check that. I guess they have 9 games, so 7-2, 6-3. Minshew did a nice job filling in, but he didn't take away the job.
Gardner Minshew performed extremely well, but I'm not sure there's anything Gardner Minshew could have done to stick Nick Foles on the bench permanently here. I mean, Nick Foles was given the free agent contract to make this a win now team. The thought was Blake Bortles is the only thing holding this team back, right? They're ready to go. Well, no one expected Jalen Ramsey to try to force his way out of Jacksonville and that defense to just not be what it's been. Leonard Fournette has been a disappointment overall. He's had a good game or two this year. So now the Jaguars are kind of in limbo, right? Because you can't commit to a rebuild with Gardner Minshew while you have $22 million a year invested in Nick Foles. You have to go forward with this because realistically, they still have a shot to be a wild card team this year. That's why Nick Foles gets the job back.
Other quarterback news. Boy, I had fun watching that game last night.
Did you?
Sorry, man.
Did you?
I'm not a over-the-top Giants hater, but as a Jets fan, I never really liked you guys and your team. All that winning, that makes us jealous.
You guys.
And, you know, you and I have talked about it a lot. We've talked about it a lot on the show. The Giants are a very broken organization. I thought when they moved on from Jerry Reese, it was time for a fresh start. It was time to bring in someone who, I'm going to put it this way, put John Mara in line. I think he's way too involved in personnel decisions. He's one of the owners. And instead, they stayed in the family, and they went with Dave Gettleman. And then since then, Gettleman has done lots of talking, which I think is a big mistake. And this most recent draft, still believe he botched it. And last night, Danny Dimes, at times, was awful. I thoroughly enjoyed going back on social media to find Giants fans right after, remember the first game for Daniel Jones, the Tampa game? And I mean, you can find hundreds of moron fans who are like, sorry, Dave Gettleman, you were right. Daniel Jones is great. I was just like, is he? Because he ain't tonight. And he's been at times, I mean, he's a turnover machine. That's the problem. You can't fumble as much as he does and be an NFL quarterback. He's leading the league with 9 lost fumbles now?
He's leading the league in turnovers, period, and he's played 7 games, right? Eli Manning started the season for the New York Giants. This is ugly. This is hard to watch as a Giants fan at this point.
This is ugly.
This is ugly. I'm not willing to give up on Daniel Jones quite yet. If you've made the investment, you have to give him a couple of seasons to see what's there, because he still is making some good plays to go along with all the horrendous plays that we've seen. Now, the other piece of this is the Giants as an organization are completely upside down right now. And Pat Shurmur is a big part of the problem as well. The play calling last night was a dumpster fire, in that not only does he not know how to get the ball to Saquon Barkley, which should be the most obvious thing in the organization's plan, considering you spent the number 2 pick on a running back who's now being paid as one of the top 3 running backs in the league simply by having been drafted as number 2. But you're also completely incapable of managing game situations. Pat Shurmur kicked field goals like you got 7 points for them last night. It was truly unbelievable. And then he punted down 12 in the fourth quarter. I melted down at the end of that game, and I want my team to lose. I just wanted to see them be competitive.
We'll continue on Monday Night Football recap, and I'm telling you, there were coaching fails on both sides. I would not be thrilled if I were a Cowboy fan with some of the things I saw last night from Jason Garrett.
The 3 is brought to you by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call today at 577-2600 to receive a $500 coupon towards your appraisal or any purchase or refinance. Dial up Dustin now. 577-2600.
And it's a fumble, and it's picked up by Dallas. Coming left, running down the sideline to the 5, Jordan Lewis with a fumble that he's run into the end zone. And Jordan Lewis is going to get about a 50-yard fumble return for an exclamation point, maraschino cherry on the sundae touchdown.
Now, back to Cofield and Company, live at the Thomas and Mack.
How'd that cherry taste?
It was overwhelming.
Brad Sham, Cowboys Radio Network, maybe with a cherry deal? I don't know. Maraschino cherry. Or is that a brand of cherry or a type of cherry?
That's a type of cherry.
Turn to candy. You'd figure all the fat guys on the show would have all the food knowledge, but candy's developing chef in waiting, just like Mark McMillan.
I am just an honorary fat guy.
Okay. Nice. Very nice. So, dreadful effort last night by reminiscent of the Redskins. The Giants. A lot of issues, I thought, in the first half. Could have got off to a great start, right? Could have got off to a great start, but couldn't finish inside the 10-yard line. I want you to just listen to Pat Shurmur and just how uninspiring this dude is. He nails it at the end. This is the problem with what the Giants did last night.
Why are you having so much trouble in the red zone, especially deep in the red zone?
I don't think it's a trend. It was today, though. You know, certainly we did. We got down there, and wanted to give Saquon some opportunities running the ball. We didn't make really many yards doing that. A couple times it got down to a third down pass that we didn't complete.
So you kick field goals. I'm watching what they're doing in the first half, and I'm saying to myself, you're 2-6. Stop kicking field goals. Really, across the NFL, if you have 4th-and-3, 4th-and-4, and you're inside the 5-yard line, stop kicking field goals. You have nothing to lose if you're the Giants. An extra win here or there for Pat Shurmur isn't going to decide his fate. stop kicking field goals. And as you mentioned, big problem, simply using one of the best weapons in all of football in Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, those are issues. The Giants, in Pat Shurmur's estimation, are supposed to take three when all of the modern football analytics suggests that kicking field goals is a path to losing, especially when you have the kind of opportunities the Giants had. That first turnover gave them the ball inside the 10-yard line. They proceeded to go three plays and 5 yards before kicking from the three. Learn from Bill Belichick the day before, who kicked from the one and essentially gave away part of his opportunity. You know, Pat Shurmur says that it's not a trend for the Giants to fail inside the red zone. They're 23rd in red zone conversion percentage this year in terms of touchdowns. So, yeah, there's a bit of a trend going on for these Giants. Pat Shurmur is uninspiring. Pat Shurmur does not have a grasp of how to use his best player. Pat Shurmur does not have a grasp of how to modern game call in terms of situations like that. So Gettleman is a mess. Shurmur is a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Giants ownership, as you mentioned, does not seem particularly moved by either, and this was one of the proudest franchises in the league for a long time, and it is adrift.
Look at where they are now. They've lost 12 of 15 in the NFC East. That's embarrassing. By the way, the Redskins suck. So to lose 12 of 15 with the Redskins in your division is pathetic. They've lost 16 of their last 21 home games. On the other side, and by the way, one last thing, because Danny Dimes in the end threw for 210, 65 came on basically a Barkley run. But for most of the game, middle of the third quarter, he's got like 85 yards passing. He gets intercepted. He fumbles twice. He holds the ball too long. He gets sacked freaking 5 times. And I guess if he turns into like a top 10 quarterback, then it'll shut me up that he was a top 10 pick. But I still believe they mismanaged what they should have done in this last draft, which was just take Josh Allen. You need defensive line help, the Kentucky Josh Allen. And this year's quarterback class is just better. You draft your quarterback this year. Now, you may have to trade, you know, to move up, but it's just a better quarterback class. They misplayed it. They reached on a guy. So he better turn out. He better turn out.
This is not the year they mismanaged, Steve. Last year is the year they mismanaged, and that caused this year to be in the situation that it is.
I don't think you can present a stronger case, though, on the whole quarterback thing, because who are you in love with from 2 years ago?
Who am I in love with from 2 years ago? They should have drafted a quarterback in air quotes, but I thought Darnold was the pick at number two.
I thought he was too, but now...
Are you done on him? Are you done on Sam Darnold?
I'm not done, but I'm also not willing to say, hey, they absolutely whiffed. I don't know what's going to happen with him. I don't know.
But I can tell you that having a quarterback on a rookie contract is still the best asset in all of the NFL if Sam Darnold turns out to be even top half of the league. Here's the problem with paying Saquon Barkley. Saquon Barkley is at the most disposable position in all of the NFL, and you, by definition at number two, had to pay him top running back money. You're paying him equal to everybody except Zeke Elliott at this point. No matter how good he is, he cannot provide you any value above that contract. That's why you try with the quarterback.
So I said a few minutes ago there were issues with Garrett. Did you have anything? Did you see anything? I mean, they won 37-18.
I have to be honest, most weeks I probably could look and find you something with Jason Garrett. I was so just overly emotionally invested in how badly the Giants were managing the game as a fan that I didn't notice Garrett as much.
My small issue, which I think could be a big issue come playoff time, he loves this Brett Maher, and the guy has kicked some bombs. At the end of the first half, he didn't take advantage of his timeouts and how much time there was left. And he set up Maher for another long field goal. Now, he's made a bunch of them. But I'm just telling you, this whole field goal thing, come playoff time, especially when you're dominating, you know, because in the middle stretch of the game, they started to dominate, and you're only kicking field goals. Look to the south from here. What's the problem with Anthony Lynn and the Chargers? He relies on the field goal kicker way too much. Now, the Cowboys have a good one, but you watch, come playoff time, this guy's going to miss a long shot because he has almost too much faith in him now. I know it's nitpicking. Just mark it down. It's week 9.
So remember about a decade ago when we had the terror threat level in this country and it was color-coded, right? It was where are we right now? Where are we on the Jason Garrett threat level right now? Because I feel like we were at red a couple of weeks ago. Then they boat raced the Eagles and – the Giants, the Giants against the Cowboys, and now what are we back to, about yellow or so with Jason Garrett? Because I feel like we're threatening with one more bad loss to go back up again on should he be fired.
Who's going to win the division?
The Giants are going to win the division. No. The
miraculous comeback.
Yeah. I think the steadiest team in the division is still the Cowboys. I think the Eagles cannot find any consistency right now. I still think the Eagles have a little tougher road to go than Dallas does, so I'll take Dallas.
Big one next week. Dallas plays the Vikings. After that, it's pretty interesting. Vikings
next,
are tough.
Next at, 4 weeks.
At Lions, at Patriots, home Bills.
That Bills offense does not travel because it doesn't really even show up at home. The Lions have become Chargers East in that they just find a way. I mean, they are finding ways to lose games that they should win. You don't expect much in the game against New England. I think this Minnesota game will show you a lot about where both of these teams are, because Minnesota realistically should have won in Kansas City this past week. They did not get as much out of Dalvin Cook as they have been. Kirk Cousins still cannot prove that he can win a game outside a dome when he absolutely has to. Kirk Cousins had been lauded as one of the best quarterbacks in the league over the 3 weeks prior to this, and then he completed 50% of his passes outdoors in Kansas City. The stigma is going to stay with him until he fixes that. I still think that the Dallas Cowboys, despite the defensive issues that they have, and they're there, are still the best team in the NFC East, and I think Dallas ultimately takes it.
ESPN Las Vegas.
Hey, Raiders on three. 1, 2, 3.
Reds.
Home of the Raiders fan.
Grabbed by Shekta Debele. He gets it to Elijah Mitrulong down the right side. Long in the front court. Kicks the ball to Antonio. Jonah, a three from the left side. Is good.
Now, back to Cofield and Company. Live at the Thomas and Mack.
Rolling on, you heard it. Thomas and Mack is the scene. Got a game coming up tonight, 7 o'clock, first regular season game. Back again. Adam Candy is alongside. McKinnell will be along in just a little bit. And we get a chance just about every pregame to speak to one of the assistant coaches. Now, we haven't spoken to, well, Kevin Kruger we have in years past. We haven't spoken to this crew of assistant coaches, so Tim Buckley, nice enough to give us a couple minutes here well before the game. What's up?
Thanks for having us on.
Of course. Now we're going to talk NFL.
I enjoyed that chat.
Well, it's funny. Once the season starts, I can't imagine you guys are doing much sports viewing. I mean, it is 7 days a week. You know, it's not 24 hours, but it's a lot of hours put in.
Especially now with the games, because they come at you pretty quickly, and we've got a busy month, so we're really on top of those things.
Is that a good thing in November? And you also up the schedule. So, I mean, it's an aggressive schedule right out of the gates. You got this game, then you have a top 40 program that's had a lot of NCAA success recently in Kansas State, and then you're going on the road against Cal and UCLA. I mean, it's tough coming out of the gates here.
Very formidable opponents, and I think we're going to find out maybe where we have to shore some things up and get better as we go down the road.
So how quickly can this team come together? I mean, it's a different formula with every group, right? I mean, most teams don't have, 10 holdovers, so everyone's kind of dealing with a new mix. So what's your feel on how they're going to come together?
It really is, and I think Coach did a great job of really putting a great emphasis on the defensive end of the floor, because that's where we thought we could make the most earliest impact with our team, and we've gotten better and better each and every day on that end, and hopefully our defense can turn some things into offense.
Yeah, it's interesting. David Jenkins is a guy who's been with Coach Otz, and from listening to Mr. Jenkins, who's sitting out this year from South Dakota State, even he noticed some different things about TJ and the way he's approaching things. That wasn't like defense wasn't important at South Dakota State, but for this team, defense has to be a central figure in what you're going to do.
Well, the one thing we did was we started working guys out in April, and as we went through the course of the summer, we realized that if we were going to make any hay, we were going to have to do it on the defensive end, get better as the season goes on offensively, get a better feel for each other, continue to improve as ball handlers and shooters, those types of things. And I think we're making really good progress. But if our defense can continue to be what it is now and we can build on it, that's a really strong foundation.
It's Tim Buckley, assistant with the Rebels. So you were on the coach's show last week. We talked just for about 5 minutes, but you brought up something really interesting. I forget if it was off the air or on the air. But anyway, you brought up something interesting about players are being watched all the time by the coaches, right? And in terms of like carving out the roles and figuring out their strengths, I don't think players realize sometimes as they go through what they're going through with practice and working out that you guys are tabulating and trying to figure out everyone's strengths and weaknesses.
Well, as assistant coaches, what we would talk about early on was we got to get to shot selection. We got to talk about shot selection. And coach was really patient with it because he wanted those guys to take the shots that they take, but then he also wanted to show them why this is an effective, efficient shot and why this isn't and what your percentage is and that type of thing. And so I don't think those guys realized it at the time, but I also think that it really made a valid point to them as, hey, it's not like we're saying we're taking this away from your game. We've got to get better at it, but let's take a look at these things too.
Coach, to that end, you play a style that is very friendly to modern analytics in terms of shot selection, in terms of what you're looking for. How do you go about convincing players of that? How do you explain to them, you know, is it just a matter of numbers? Is it a matter of just showing them how their game works with that?
I would say it's a combination. And the other thing that coach did was he pointed out to them three of the best players off the dribble in shooting in the NBA were James Harden, Steph Curry, and Trae Young. And their percentages were in the 30s. And if those are the best in the world shooting it at that level, and obviously they get the ball with the clock running out and they've got to go make a play, but his point was these guys are so much better as catch-and-shoot shooters. You guys can be so much better as catch-and-shoot shooters. We'll continue to work on those other things, but we've really got to be an efficient team on the offensive end.
What did you learn about your team in the exhibition?
They have really carried over practice to the games. And I think it's a group that is really looking forward to play games because we've practiced hard. We've done things that you don't always like doing, playing defense, playing one-on-one defense, blocking out, rebounding, you know, doing all those little things that help you be successful. And I think they want to go play and take that out on somebody else, if you will.
Game time, 7 o'clock. Purdue Fort Wayne's in town here for the regular season opener at the Thomas and Mack. How'd you grade the defense from end to end in that game, in the exhibition?
Well, I would say that there were things that we did really well, and there were other things where we got caught off guard a few times when we knew we didn't want to let Seth Hanna shoot that three, and he squeezed them off, and I think he surprised our guys a little bit. But if you can shoot it, you can shoot it. And I think sometimes when that guy hits that first one, that rim just gets bigger and bigger for him, and so then he starts making tougher shots. You don't want to give a guy an easy shot because it gets you as the game goes on, because then a game gets a little bit easier for him, and I think he really felt his rhythm in that game, and we just weren't able to take it.
You guys won, I think it was 112-54. I was glad to hear actually a couple of players were disappointed with the defense.
Yeah.
Which out of a, you know, you're looking at a 60-point win, and players are walking away. They're like, yeah, that wasn't good enough.
Right, and I think they've bought into those things that we've been trying to sell, and what we try to do is we really try to narrow our focus as to these are the things that we'd really like to take away from the other team. So we've simplified it a little bit on the defensive side of the ball and the offensive side of the ball, and I think they take a lot of pride in that.
The makeup of this team is interesting because, like I said, newcomers are part of the mix with everyone. The most elite programs have newcomers. You guys have newcomers, whether they're senior transfers or JUCOs or just regular transfers. For guys like Tillman and Antonio to be some of the alphas, like right out of the gates, who guys are going to follow, I think is actually kind of unique because sometimes transfers have a little, you know, a little time before they officially blend in.
Well, I think what you find is guys who have urgency to their game, they adapt much quicker than guys that try to feel their way around. I think the big thing with Donnie, though, is Donnie was more of a role-type player at Utah. He wasn't necessarily the alpha, and so he's kind of transitioning into a different role, but he's got to continue to do the things that he does well and not try to do too much.
Did I oversell him? Is he an alpha?
I think he can be, yeah, but what I also think he is he's an unselfish player, and there's probably times where he could take shots where he's going to make the kick because he just feels like it's the more right play.
Coach, what does the concept of urgency look like in a basketball player? It's a word that I haven't heard used in that context as much, and I'm really curious about it.
Well, I would say motor, having to get something done, whether it's going and getting a rebound, coming off a screen, sprinting back defensively and getting a back tip, you know, different things that you feel like every possession's important and it's competitive. And those two guys, Jonah and Donnie, they're very competitive guys in practice every day.
It's Tim Buckley, UNLV assistant. So we had heard a lot about Jonah Antonio being just a lunatic. Guy plays hard in practice. He's the guy, you know, again, he's the alpha. Also heard, hey, you know, whatever team he's on generally wins in practice. That was a good open look for the fans, and really for a confidence standpoint, from a confidence standpoint for Jonah. I don't know what you'd grade his performance, but between the threes, the defense he played, and the energy with which he played, I thought it was just a lights out opening game.
Well, I think we as a coaching staff have to take full credit because Jonah couldn't shoot a lick before he got here.
I was like, I think there's something sarcastic
coming
here.
Yeah, no doubt. No, but that passion, that energy, that motor, it's really carried over and carried into the rest of our team, and they're all starting to play that way on a consistent basis.
I can't remember. I think he made 6 threes for the game, maybe 5.
Yes.
Were they all on the catch?
Yes.
I don't think there was
He may have had one skid the curb where he shot faked and then it on the floor and stayed outside the three-point line.
All right. So who else do you think can grow into reliable three-point weapons?
Well, I see us getting better every day at the three-point line with guys like Amari Hardy, Bryce Hamilton, Elijah, Mature Long. Those guys continue to work on it. They continue to get better, and you just don't know when it's going to hit and when it's going to click. But I think if they take good shots and they take them in rhythm, they have an opportunity to make them.
Amari's going to be an interesting follow because his game, his biggest strength is getting to the hole. And most times you have to dribble to do that. But there's a balance that you guys want because, you know, if you sit on the sidelines, if you're close to that bench, you hear, move it, move it, move it. Like, there's not a lot of tolerance for dribbling. So how is that going to work out here, you know, early in the season when a guy, you know, is accustomed to dribble drive? And he had a lot of good finishes in that game. So he knows that it's working and it's worked for him in the past.
Yeah, I think what he's really starting to figure out and what we've really tried to work on is the further you are away from the basket, take less dribbles, and when you're in the lane, you can take more because you've got to get your legs underneath you to finish or to get out of the lane to make a kick because the shot blocker is rotated over. And I think efficiency with the dribble is something that he recognizes and he knows, but sometimes you go back to those habits and you got to break them and you got to get better. But he's got a burst, and when he uses that burst and he gets to the rim, he's a pretty high-level finisher throughout college basketball with finishing around the rim.
Lefty and now righty. It looks like he worked on his right hand. I saw him even on the left side finish with his right hand. Now, you mentioned Bryce. Bryce is a really interesting case because I don't know that Bryce ever felt real comfortable last year. You know, freshman, I use the word alpha. He might have it in him, but right now he's not an alpha. So how do you balance Bryce getting confidence, being an attacker on offense, but also not overdoing it and being selfish and, you know, kind of doing it outside the team framework?
I think what we've really focused on with him is consistency of motor and playing with that burst and that energy on a more consistent basis. And I think he's really working towards that. He's one of those guys. He and Donnie Tillman are the two guys that stand out on our team that are downhill guys. So if they can get downhill and they get that dribble in the lane, they're strong enough to finish, but they also need to play off of 2 feet so they can make the kick and don't have to take so many challenge shots.
Folks, I'm telling you, if you missed the exhibition game, if you haven't seen these guys play, if you didn't watch Tillman play at Utah, one of his great strengths is, first of all, he can play every position, right? I don't know if he can defend every position, but he can play just about every position on offense. And you mentioned the word downhill. He's one of these guys, and Blair has a little bit in him too, but Tillman's one of these guys who can grab a rebound and, you know, 75 feet later can be moving towards a finish or dish. I mean, he goes downhill and he goes hard.
Yes, and I think anytime you have guys that can pull it off the board and push it in transition, it makes your break go faster. And Donnie's one of those guys, once he gets going downhill, it's pretty difficult to just go get in front of him. You know, you can't make him go east and west. He's going north and south.
Coach Tim Buckley, UNLV, running Rebels. Coach Steve mentioned the idea of at his position. What is left in terms of the idea of positions in basketball at this point? Because I feel like the game is moving more and more away from defined 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, gotten more toward guys who can do a little bit more of everything.
Yeah, I think it's easy to put the numbers down when you draw up sets and you put in plays, but really what it comes down to is what are you able to do and what do you need to stay away from? And I think what you try to do with players is you try to really get them to accentuate their strengths. We continue to work on the things they're not as good at, but then we don't bring it to the game until it's ready to go from practice to the game. And so you don't want guys to play out of character. And the one thing that I learned the 2 years I was in the NBA is everybody thinks you've got to be the main guy. You got to have the ball. You got to be the featured guy. You got to take the shots. Those role players are making $8 to $10 million a year in the NBA. So if you can figure out what your role is and play with an edge, and you have some of those other things that you need to play in that league, that's all you have to have. You don't have to be the star.
So it's more about who you are and what you can do than it is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like, when you're putting a combination of guys on the floor, you're not saying, do I have a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? You're saying, do I have guys who can make this shot, who can get this rebound, who can defend this other player?
Right. And yeah. Coach is big on, he puts their initials on the board. He doesn't use numbers. He'll say AH and JA, and because he likes to move them around and put them in different spots, and he doesn't want you to think you're pigeonholed with a number.
Well, and clearly the five is still part of the mix. The center is still part of the mix here because of the way you're going to play defense, as Otzelberger described it. Basically, he wants the opposition to feel like a quarterback coming up the floor and just getting blitzed, right? So if you're going to take those chances out front, you got to have someone on the back end who can actually finish every once in a while and block some shots.
Right, and there's no question we have that in Bakke. And Shekton's probably more of a wall-up guy and make you score over the top of him, but he's very intelligent in terms of his positioning and where to get. So we'd really like to have that at the rim, especially when we're putting pressure on the ball.
All right, Coach. Good luck in the game tonight. We'll see you down on the floor.
Thank you very much.
There you go, Tim Buckley, UNLV assistant coach, giving us a couple minutes here. We'll send it back to the studio. We're going to get into a little fantasy football as we talk Trust Us with John Fromme.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.
Brissett out of the gun, first and goal from the three. Here's a little shovel pass to Zach Pascal, looking for the goal line. Still looking, no signal yet. Is he in? Finally, he's in. Touchdown, Zach Pascal. Touchdown, INDY. Zach Pascal finds the end zone for the second time today.
It's time to Trust Us, presented by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call him today at 577-2600.
John Fromme is back in studio in for Dustin DeHart. John, how you doing?
Not too bad. How you guys doing today?
We're good. You hear a little Colts action on the way back there. Not that Jacoby Brissett is a super highly coveted fantasy quarterback, but that takes another quarterback. Yeah. Out of the mix, so we'll get to what the quarterback situation looks like here in just a couple minutes. First, let's talk about Cam Newton. I don't know if you're in a league where anyone was planning on trying to sneak Cam Newton, you know, back into the lineup. I was, and I wonder what happens now because the option of Kyle Allen isn't real attractive even in these bye weeks.
Well, I was never a big fan of Cam Newton anyway, to be honest with you, so I wasn't going to pick him up, and nobody's even sniffled at him, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Kyle Allen, if you were thinking about him, because like I said, the waiver wire this week is pretty gross for quarterbacks. Last 6 weeks, whew, he has not been good fantasy-wise. 3 points, 11 points, 17, 0.3, that's impossible to do, and 14.88. Nick Foles is going to be back in there for Minshew Mania. What do you think? You like it?
I love Nick Foles.
Yeah?
Yep. Big fan, and I think he doesn't miss a beat. I think he'll do fine the rest of the year, as long as he stays healthy.
It's a killer for people who actually were getting some production out of Minshew, because he had a couple of 21-point weeks. That was sandwiched in between a 4-point week and about an 8-point week. He was not very good in London. So, you know, again, that's another move where if you're in a league where you have Minshew and maybe Foles isn't available – you're kind of screwed. How about the quarterback story this week?
Going back to actually with Minshew, funny thing is with Minshew, I'm playing Dustin this week, and Minshew hasn't been doing anything for him, so I'm happy about that.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
As far as the quarterbacks this week, listen, Garoppolo actually was just picked up. I wish I did because at the next three home games they have, and I think they're playing Arizona again in 2 weeks, right?
Yep. Yeah, pretty easy schedule, and he's been a hell of a pickup. These guys are on a bye this week. Deshaun Watson, Brady, Carson Wentz, now Minshew and Foles. I don't know if I would say Brandon Allen is a key figure, but, you know, he's on a bye. Case Keenum and Dwayne Haskins, another one who's not great. And then you add in Mahomes is hurt, Matt Ryan is hurt, now Brissett, who you heard the highlight with Brissett, he's hurt. Man, it is slim pickings. From this list of guys who are owned by 65% or less in many leagues, who would you take? Daniel Jones, Matt Moore, Ryan Tannehill, Fitzy, or Brian Hoyer?
Actually, I don't mind for just a substitute. I don't mind Brian Hoyer. I think he'll do fine. And I also like Tannehill. The Giants, they just forgot how to play football. I mean, I just don't think they're going to do anything with Daniel Jones the rest of the year, to be honest with you. And Matt Moore, I don't mind him, but they have so many other weapons that they don't really need him to do anything. So I'll go with Hoyer.
Jones is also one of those guys. He could be having a good game, and then all of a sudden it blows up in your face because he, you know, he can fumble at any moment. He's got 9 lost fumbles on the season, so that's dangerous. Matt Moore is still a really interesting option. It's just a matter of, you know, how much more time is he going to get, and are they going to play the game each week where they scare the crap out of you until Friday or Saturday, and you don't know if Mahomes is back or Moore's going to play?
Yeah, honestly, I think Mahomes will come back sooner rather than later. He's just itching to get back on the field. So, yeah, I don't think I would throw anything at Matt Moore, to be honest with you.
Boy, running backs, and this is where it gets crazy. Look who's on a bye this week for running backs. Phillip Lindsay, his backup, Royce Freeman, Carlos Hyde and Duke Johnson, Leonard Fournette, Sony Michel, James White, Rex Burkhead, all the Patriots dudes, Jordan Howard, Miles Sanders, Adrian Peterson, Chris Thompson. And then there's a bunch of guys hurt. Look at the list of injured running backs on top of the guys with a bye. I mean, there's just no one out there.
I agree with that.
Right? It's nuts. Your options. I mean, I was fired up today to try to put in for Kalen Ballage. That's how thin we are right now with running backs.
Well, and I actually, a few weeks ago, the last time I was on, I picked up Mark Walton. And
so
but
did
now
I.
He's gone for until the 14th week. But I don't know. Ballage, I'm not a fan. But Trey Edmonds, he's a better running back than Samuels.
Yeah.
So if they just give him the ball, I think he would be fine. And Miami, Miami's Miami, so I don't think they'll put a lot of points on the board.
And, of course, Trey Edmonds got 12 carries, 73 yards, and he's dinged up. So I think he's going to play, but you know, a little iffy going into the game. And other guys that maybe you could take a shot at, but I think they're probably picked up in most quality leagues, are Ronald Jones and Alexander Mattison, who really still hasn't gotten going because
Dalvin Cook.
Dalvin Cook? Nets guard from – no? Yeah, so
I like Madison, but yeah, he's never going to be able to get on the field
unless Dalvin Cook gets hurt. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Cut or keep Minshew? Do you save him or roster spots too valuable?
Too valuable. I would have to drop him.
Cam's 100% drop because he's on IR and out for the year. Ty Johnson. I don't know that I'd be interested in keeping any of the Lions running backs because guess who Patricia mirrors in his approach with running backs? His old boss. Belichick.
Yeah. Again, everybody, the choice I had was Ty Johnson or Mark Walton. I went with Walton. Well, I ended up losing anyway. So.
Are you gonna keep Walton?
I held on to him again this week because I'm doing actually pretty good. I'm second place, and I'm number one in power rating. So I'm fine everywhere across the board on running back, so I should be fine.
But crazy enough, he would be a playoff running back for you then.
Yeah, I mean, he's talented, and if they just give him the ball, I think he could shine.
Philip Dorsett, I think it's pretty clear what the Patriots are doing at receiver. It's Edelman 1, and there's a reason they traded for Sanu. Sanu is basically just big Edelman. He's moved ahead of Dorsett, so I don't know if that means you keep Dorsett on deep rosters, but I think you'd have to drop him.
Yeah, I would drop him, and I think Sanu is going to get so many looks. I mean, how many times did they target him this past week? Seems like about 15, 16 times.
John, we're now into November. John Fromey's with us. Trust us on fantasy football, but we also make sure to mention what's happening with Nova Home Loans. We're in November now, so what's cooking?
Well, you know, the crazy thing is we actually had a call yesterday from a client trying to do a refinance, a rate and term, and the only thing stopping him is his credit. Well, we're actually the only lender in the country that has a free in-house credit services division. So we're going to work with him over the next 60 to 90 days, get his score up to where it needs to be so we can get him a decent rate so we could actually get rid of his mortgage insurance and lower his rate.
Explain the tune-up because there's never really a time where you're out of the mix. I mean, you guys will tell people if they, you know, the mortgage tune-up's not going to do anything for them, but I know Dustin told us a story last week of someone had been in their house for maybe like 13 months, and he was able to work the numbers to get them better. In terms of length of term, I think he cut 8 years off of the payments.
Yeah, because late last year, a lot of people bought their house at higher interest rates, 4.5 and above. So we're turning a lot of the late 2018 purchases and refinancing them, and values have come up. And in some cases, we're actually able to get them a lower rate, but also buy them out of their mortgage insurance. So if you have an interest rate of 4.5 or above, you got to call us to do a mortgage tune-up. Listen, it takes 10 minutes at the most. It's worth it.
577-2600. And, John, it sounds like you are the number two fantasy guy on the show in terms of results because Dustin's team's not doing too well. I only have one team. It stinks. Adam Hill has 25 teams. I think like 18 are going to make the playoffs, maybe more. So congrats on the good start. We appreciate the time today.
No worries. Have a great day. Enjoy the game tonight.
There you go, John Fromey, Nova Home Loans. Reminder, this Friday I'll be out and about downtown. The historic William Hill Race and Sportsbook at the Plaza has reopened this week. Complete remodel, updated space. It's got the largest seamless HD video wall in all of downtown Las Vegas. They're going to have a turning on ceremony of the HD wall. Guy you all know, Oscar Goodman, will be on the scene. So come in at 1 o'clock. You can come get lunch, pop a pizza, hash house on the property, and then I'll be there with T-shirts and UNLV hoops tickets, football tickets, show tickets. It's noon to 2 at the Plaza right there in the William Hill Race and Sportsbook. I'll be on the scene with ESPN Las Vegas.
Trust Us is presented by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call today at 577-2600.